the dead center of the work week. It's our hump show, which means you get to ask Amy anything. That comes up next hour here on After Hours. So make sure you send your questions. Most creative, most unique, most insightful, most original. And I honestly have no idea what producer Pete is looking for. So I guess we'll find out together what catches his eye. At Amy After Hours or on our Facebook page. Same old logo and moniker that you can find for Ask Amy Anything. That has not changed. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. Oh, whoops. Now see, it's been a long time since I've dropped those three letters.
Where?
But
that place.
It's a little bit like Twitter and X, is it not? I do it just to be a pain in the rear and say Twix because it's like a celebrity marriage. But there are a lot of people out there who continue to call it by its first name, not its current name, despite the attempts of Elon Musk. And we were nearly 12 years with the three letters, and then they just changed the name and made something up that they could get for free. So in that regard, it's an old habit that dies hard, if you will. Okay, let's talk some football before I get myself into some trouble. It was a Friday night in São Paulo, Brazil. It was the Eagles. It was the Packers. It was a lot of points.
Love, back to throw. Time expires. Now throws downfield. Wide open is Jaden Reed. Breaks a tackle with the 30 to the 20. And he's going to waltz into the end zone for the touchdown. 70 yards from Jordan Love to Jaden Reed, who scores his second touchdown of the night. And Green Bay retakes the lead with 5:11 to go here in the first half.
There's a lot of talk about Brazil and the dangers of Brazil. It didn't turn out that there were any major security issues or crime that we heard reported. But for the Packers, the loss came at a price. Not only did Saquon Barkley have three touchdowns in this one, and even though Jordan Love and the Packers were able to put points on the board, they lost the game and then in the final minute lost Jordan Love. The call there on the Westwood One radio network. Love, we now know, has an MCL sprain. We don't know exactly how long he'll be out. It depends upon his healing, but we keep hearing about Malik Willis and even from Matt LaFleur giving him the vote of confidence.
He's put a lot of time and effort into this thing, and he's grinded. He's learned the terminology and is able to spit out the play calls, and we got confidence in him. And I think, you know, if he's given a full week of preparation, a full week of practice, I got confidence that he'll go out there and perform at a high level.
But really, what else are you going to say at this point? If he's your guy, you have no other choice. We are pleased to welcome Andy Herman, who has the Pack-A-Day podcast, very popular among Green Bay Packers fans, also writes for the Packer Report and is a guest on our show on a fairly regular basis. Andy, in light of the last few days, the injury news, what we hear from Matt LaFleur, what's your interpretation of that incident late in the game on Friday and what's played out since then?
Yeah, obviously super disappointing, and it's one thing to lose a game, it's another to potentially lose your quarterback. And as you see Jordan go down, and the first thing you're thinking of is, oh no, could that be a season-ending injury? And you're just trying to avoid that at all costs. And obviously we saw that with Aaron last year in New York, and it's just the worst thing for any team is to potentially have a season where you're expected to compete, and then all of a sudden game one quarterback is down and your season full of hope and expectations is over. So you're just hopefully trying to avoid the worst, and you see him kind of walk off a little bit with a trainer, and you never quite know if it's going to be one of those ACLs or if you might get lucky like Patrick Mahomes did a couple years ago where it ended up being a 1 to 2 week injury. And Matt LaFleur this week did not even rule out the potential of him playing, although I think that's probably a little bit of subterfuge at this point. But yeah, that's exactly what's going through your mind, and you're just trying to avoid the worst case scenario. And that literally added injury to insult in that game in a performance where they had every opportunity to go and win that game, and unfortunately due to their own mistakes, they could not get the job done.
Well, I definitely want to talk about the game, but I'm glad you brought up Matt LaFleur's move. The Packers don't put Love on IR, but you think that's more gamesmanship than reality?
I think him saying that there's the potential to play this week, or at least not ruling it out, is maybe a little bit more gamesmanship. I didn't expect him to go on IR simply because it sounds like they're hopeful that this is maybe more in the 2 to 3 to 4 week range than anything in the 4 to 6. And obviously putting him on IR would eliminate any chance of him playing in the first 4 weeks. And if there's any 0.01% chance that he can play in the next 4 weeks, I think they would have kept him on the active roster, and that seems like what is the case right now. But yeah, I do think as far as him playing this week, listen, they certainly know better than I do, but it would certainly be a little bit surprising if he played this week. But listen, if there's a chance, you certainly give him the week, and that's what Green Bay has always said in the past, that they're going to give him the opportunity for the entire week to play out before they make that decision, and that's what they're going to do here. And now we just have to kind of wait and see. But no, I think it's probably more likely that Malik Willis is the starter this week.
Annie Herman is with us. He's got the wildly popular Pack-A-Day podcast. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Well, what do we know about Malik Willis, who hasn't been a Packer very long?
Yeah, we know that he's extremely athletic. He has a live arm. He can get hit any layer of the field. And we know that he's a brand new Green Bay Packer just a couple weeks ago. So the odds that he knows the entire playbook at this point are extremely thin. You know, going back to when Green Bay brought in a rookie this past offseason at the quarterback position, Matt LaFleur was asked after a couple weeks of, you know, where he was in the playbook. And he said he's like, drinking water through a fire hose at that point. And that was obviously Michael Pratt, their seventh round pick. It is very difficult to pick up this offense in a very short period of time. So you have to think that they're going to narrow it down. And I asked Matt about that, of what percentage of the playbook he would probably know. And he said he didn't want to put a percentage on it, but that he knew that he would know 100% of the game plan. So they're going to put a game plan in place specifically for Malik Willis and, cater it to what he does best. I would expect there to be maybe a little bit more read option. Matt does have that in his bag of tricks and in his playbook. And he doesn't obviously do it a ton with Aaron or with Jordan, but I do think he's going to add a lot of that in there. There's a lot of stuff that will be potential, you know, obviously run pass option from a run or a little bubble screen to the side that he's ran a bunch in the past, a lot of two running back sets. And now you've got this option of maybe using your quarterback a little bit more as a running threat. So I think we're going to see a little bit of that. Wouldn't surprise me to see some deep shots down the field with Malik Willis's arm talent, but it's going to be a very pared down playbook and a very specific playbook for Malik Willis this week if he does end up the starter.
Andy, how did the Packers get in this position where Malik Willis is their only option for Jordan Love? What happened with the QB depth chart?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, they drafted Michael Pratt in the seventh round. Sean Clifford was a fifth round pick a season ago. And those were the two quarterbacks that were really battling it out all offseason, and it just didn't work out. The Michael Pratt one is a little bit more interesting because you saw some of the upside and the talent there. Green Bay, known for developing quarterbacks and known for giving their draft picks a very long leash, basically said goodbye to him at the end of camp. Didn't even bring him back on the practice squad. He's in Tampa right now as a practice squad quarterback, so that was a little bit interesting. As far as Sean Clifford goes, he was their backup a season ago. Looked like he could be sort of one of those game manager quarterbacks who could come in and run the offense if you absolutely needed him to. But he came in this offseason ever since really minicamp. He had a minicamp practice where he threw three interceptions to Zane Anderson. Has thrown interceptions all throughout training camp and in preseason. Just didn't really look like he was not only just taking a step, but he looked like he was significantly taking a step backwards. Green Bay was clearly not pleased with how that went. And instead of going with a rookie that they didn't trust or a second-year guy that took a major step backwards and was turning the ball over all over the place, they decided to go with a quarterback like Malik Willis, who has definitely more upside, has started some games in the league, albeit not with great results, and decided that that was a better play for them. And it's hard to argue at this point that even with the talent that Malik Willis has, even if it's not come to fruition yet, that that's probably still the better play over both Michael Pratt and Sean Clifford at this point.
Andy, looking at the game in Brazil, it was a high-scoring affair. There were a lot of yards. There were a bunch of turnovers. There were a lot of rushing touchdowns for Saquon Barkley. So what did you take away?
Yeah, we knew going into that game, week one can be a little bit of a chaos project, and you never quite know what you're going to get in week one. Add on top of that, a game in Brazil internationally, first time anyone's ever played in Brazil. You've obviously got the long flight, and then add on top of that, a field that was extremely slippery for both sides, and you saw people slipping all over the place. There were some pretty big plays in that game for Green Bay, both on offense and defense, that I think if the field conditions were better, I think they connect on easily. And I think Philly obviously had the same thing, and it's not to make an excuse. Philly had the same international travel. They had the same field conditions. They had the same everything, and they got the job done, and Green Bay didn't. But I went through and I counted countless mistakes for Green Bay in that game. In fact, I counted up 39 of them, and there were a few more I could have added and was just maybe being generous by the point it got to number 39 on the list. just a lot of missed tackles, a lot of missed throws, drop passes, a ton of penalties, just uncharacteristic things that you just don't see from this Green Bay team. Even the young team that they had last year, and I know they're youngest in the league again this year, that we didn't really see them have the multitude of mistakes that they had this week against Philadelphia. And I think they're really going to be you know, sort of ruin the opportunity of coming away with a win in that game, especially now that you're going to have games probably without Jordan Love, and some of those losses could potentially stack up as they try to fight for a playoff spot down the line. Not picking up that win in a very winnable game against Philly is definitely going to be a level of disappointing.
What did you hear from players and or coaches about the trip to Brazil after everything that was said beforehand?
Sounds like everything went out without a hitch, and it didn't seem like they had any real problems or issues other than with the field. It sounds like the travel was good. It sounds like there was no security concerns. Everyone was super friendly. So everything was a very positive takeaway other than the fact, again, that you had a very slippery field. And I will say it seemed like in the second half when maybe they did some cleat adjustments, it was a little bit better, and you didn't see it as much in the second half, but you still definitely saw enough of it. I don't know what the situation was there. It sounds like they specifically had a turf that was approved by both the Eagles and the Packers that they brought in, and it was a very similar field to what both the Eagles and the Packers used. So not exactly sure what the situation was. I know Kenny Clark had some comments again that the field was in horrible condition. So it's just unfortunate that that happens. But outside of that, it sounds like everything went perfect.
It was really weird this past weekend to see Aaron Jones score a touchdown for the Vikings. I'm still trying to wrap my mind around that. What do you think the potential is for the new running backs group?
Yeah, I think you saw a lot of potential. And I thought Emmanuel Wilson really flashed this past week. He had 4 carries for over 40 yards, had another couple receptions on the day, or at least a couple targets, I should say. And I thought that was a really promising start from him. And then you kind of go to Josh Jacobs, where in the beginning of the game, it looked like he really couldn't get anything going. I think that was a lot more of the offensive line. And then you started seeing in the second half as he started getting a few more carries, gaining some momentum, the line was blocking a little bit better, and you really saw him be a little bit more of a dynamic piece in this offense. I don't know that either, you know, any running back on this roster, Marshawn Lloyd included, their third-round pick, is going to be able to fully, you know, take the place of Aaron Jones if he were to be healthy through the entirety of the season. Green Bay's betting that, you know, based on recent results and Aaron Jones having 3 injuries a season ago, that Jones just might be at the point where, yeah, when he's in the game, nobody's doubting what he is capable of, but can you get him for a full 17-game season? Can he be fully healthy when you get to the playoffs? And Green Bay clearly thought that at this point that was not going to be the case. They wanted to go with a little bit of a younger running back who had maybe a little bit more of a bigger build that could hold up to the wear and tear, and then, again, bring in third-round pick Marshawn Lloyd as well. We'll see how that develops. I think they have enough running backs in this room to be very successful even without Aaron Jones, but it is very difficult to see him in purple and yellow, and he obviously had a great first week for Minnesota.
Andy Herman is with us from Green Bay, the Pack-A-Day podcast, looking back on week number one, but also talking about Jordan Love, Malik Willis moving forward. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. What about tight end, or what other questions do you have about this Packers offense starting 24?
Yeah, from an offensive standpoint, the interesting thing is this looked very much like a Packers offense. I think the disappointing aspect was leaving points on the board. They were not as good in the red zone as they should have been. That's something that they're usually pretty good at. I thought they got a little bit predictable. Even on the two-point play, it was basically just a halfback dive. That's very uncharacteristic for a Matt LaFleur offense. They usually have a couple wrinkles that they'll throw at you that they know are going to be successful, and Green Bay just couldn't find it in the red zone. But outside of that, they found a way to run the ball. They had open receivers down the field. Jaden Reed was absolutely fantastic. So I don't think there was a ton of question marks coming out of this one. I think who's going to be the starting right guard long-term? Is it going to be Sean Ryan, or is it going to be Jordan Morgan, their first-round pick, or do those two continue to rotate? And then it was really interesting. I've kind of been on the bandwagon for a while now that I thought Tucker Kraft was going to be tight end number one in this offense, but never did I really expect it to be so much of a discrepancy that I think Luke Musgrave only played 17 or 18 snaps in this game. So they got to find a way to involve him more, maybe run a little bit more of 12 personnel, get those two tight ends on the field and unlock the talent that Luke Musgrave has, because he's the sky is the limit for him as a tight end in this league, but they got to figure out a way to really unlock that potential. So those are some of the question marks I have, but I think this offense is going to be, once Jordan gets back and healthy, hopefully sooner rather than later, I think they're going to be running on all cylinders sooner rather than later.
Saquon Barkley obviously had room to run, and they were able to make space for him with the touchdowns. In terms of that run defense, what's your expectation for it?
Yeah, it's unfortunate that they had a couple of those plays that really gashed him. There's the one in particular where they had it really set up perfectly, and then 3 guys got out of their gaps right at the last second, and Saquon, of course, took advantage of that and had a 30-40-yard run down the field, and probably could have gone for more if Javon Buller didn't make a good play at the end to make the tackle. So I think that was the really big one that was really disappointing. You have the touchdown run as well, where there was a misalignment, and then Kenny Clark kind of got blocked out of the gap entirely. Quay Walker came down and missed on the running back. So there were a couple plays in this one that make you disappointed in the end result. But I think if you look at, you know, the remainder of the game, Green Bay probably held up better against Saquon and in the run game in general than they have in the past. So I think there's signs there, but as we know, it sometimes just is just that one big run that kind of takes the running game to an entirely different level and really increases your average on the day and your efficiency on the day. So they just got to make sure that it's a bit more consistent. I think there's some promising signs there. And we know that Jeff Hafley is going to want to keep that extra safety in the box as much as possible. So it's going to be paramount that they do well against the run, because otherwise they're not going to get in some of those third and long situations that we know they want to be in.
And even considering in the NFC North, where I think the division may be better overall than what some people expected, especially if the Vikings can keep up any type of a winning percentage. So, yeah, being able to run the ball and stop the run, that's no different than what you generally get in the NFC North, right?
No, very much so, especially as the weather gets colder and you're outside in Chicago or outside at Lambeau. That definitely becomes a very important aspect. But I'm with you. I think this division's going to be really good. Outside of Green Bay, all three of the other teams won, albeit with a little help from Tennessee and a lot of turnovers at the end of that game. But outside of that, yeah, this division's going to be really tough. Minnesota looks really good, albeit against the Giants. But I still think this is going to be a dogfight for this division, with Detroit being one of the best teams in the league.
Overall, anything stand out to you about the changes and the games that were played in week one?
Yeah, a couple things. I thought, first of all, Carolina, I know we expected to be bad, but my goodness, they looked like a JV team playing against a pro team. It just looked a complete level different. And losing Derek Brown this week, and then for a team that already was massively struggling, a brutal start for Bryce Young. It's not like they were going up against one of the, like, the Chiefs or the Ravens or something like that. Like, the Saints are fine, but that was an absolute blowout performance by the Saints, and kudos to them for getting the job done, but they looked terrible. I thought Pittsburgh got the most ultimate Pittsburgh Steelers win. Like, credit Mike Tomlin. That guy just figures out ways to win almost no matter what. That guy has a winning record or a 500 record almost every single year. And you're thinking Atlanta's going to come out, new quarterback, new excitement with that team, and Pittsburgh just is like, no, we're going to win with 6 field goals and Justin Fields at quarterback, and it just doesn't even matter. So that was super impressive. And then we saw some interesting quarterback play. The rookies really struggled, which is not super unexpected, but I think overall that there's some exciting teams, and I'm really interested to see how this Packers team with Malik Willis can weather the storm and hopefully get back in that playoff picture towards the end of the year.
Okay, I have to ask you this as a Flyer, Andy, and if I'm catching you off guard, totally understandable. I just saw that the documentary, if we can call it that, on Aaron Rodgers is going to drop around Christmas time, and it's called Enigma. What are you expecting?
Man, that's a great question, and I would expect anything and everything at this point. I don't think there's anything I would be surprised by at this point, and Enigma is such a perfect word for it, because, you know, covering Aaron Rodgers for so many years, there are so many really awesome things that he does. No matter what, you know, side of everything you come down on, there's some really awesome things that he did. There's an article this week about all the work that he's done in Chico, California, and the philanthropy and everything like that. I've seen him do stuff for kids with childhood cancer that's just unbelievably amazing. I'm hoping that we kind of get both sides of the story, some of the really good stuff, some of the really interesting stuff, some of the maybe not so great stuff. That's kind of what makes Aaron Aaron, and he's so great for the league, and the fact that as an NFL, you kind of need guys like that where everyone's either tuning in to cheer for him or cheer against him, and there's usually not any in between, and those polarizing figures are sometimes really good for the league. And I know a lot of people were tuning in last night to see how he was going to do, and again, either cheer for him or against him, and regardless of where you come down on it, it's good for the game.
How much is he missed in Green Bay, Andy?
That's a really interesting question. I haven't even really thought of that. I think just like when Brett Favre left, there was going to be Brett Favre people no matter what. And a lot of people wearing Vikings jerseys because they supported Brett, even in Green Bay at the time. And I think there's still a lot of those people that support Aaron in the same way. I think the divorce went about as clean as you could possibly hope it to go. There wasn't any, you know, major jabs back and forth. It was mostly professional, which I think led to a lot of people, again, still having a very positive view of Aaron. But I think everyone's very excited about Jordan, what he did last year. I think people recognize that the situation with Aaron, with age and contract and everything, it was probably time to move on and see what Jordan could do. And then when Jordan followed that up with a really impressive season last year, I think everyone sort of understood it. So I don't think there's any really burned bridges. I think Aaron will go in the Packers Hall of Fame. His number will be retired and all those things. But I'm sure there's people that miss him. I'm sure there's people that were, again, ready to move on. But that's what kind of makes Aaron Aaron. And like I said, kind of that enigma, as the show is appropriately called.
And as you point out, it helps that Jordan Love and the Packers really took off in the second half. And so there's maybe a little less of that looking back to what the Packers had. Yeah, that's a great point. At Andy Herman NFL, he's a writer for the Packer Report. He's a podcast host, and he's the owner of the Pack-A-Day podcast, which I know is really popular for Packers fans. Andy, it's great to catch up with you for the first time this season. Thanks so much for a couple of minutes.
Hey, can't wait to do it again. Thanks so much, Amy.
Packers definitely have high expectations, along with the Lions. Both made the playoffs last year. We've seen the Bears start out with a win. Also, the Sam Darnold-led Vikings start out with a win. Now, reality may set in very quickly. It's just been 1 week, and you don't win a Super Bowl in September, as Bill Belichick pointed out. But it could be one of the tougher divisions in football if Jordan Love can get back quickly. We podcast all of our conversations with our guests separately, in addition to the 4 hours of the show. And so you can always find those links at A-Law Radio or on our Facebook page. And while you're there, vote for the TD of the week, because that poll is still live. If you have not heard the candidates, we'll give you a chance to hear them and vote. It was a touchdown Tuesday, and it was our first one of the season. And so that poll is still waiting for you. It's beckoning. It's calling your name. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
It's a touchdown Tuesday on After Hours.
Firing for the end zone. Caught. Touchdown. Touchdown.
Takes it himself to the pylon.
One man to beat 10. He's gone.
They throw in the end zone. Caught. Touchdown.
Hey, the guy missed. He's inside the 5. He's to the 3-2-1. Touchdown.
Southern's helping into the end zone. Touchdown.
To cast your vote for the TD of the week, give us a call at 855-212-4227. The Miami Dolphins.
Slash and take Tua back to throw. Wants a deep one. Downfield. He's got Tyreek. Tyreek at the 40, 35, 39. Down the sideline he goes. Touchdown, Miami.
The Minnesota Vikings.
And here comes Daniel Jones, 12 of 22 for 111 yards. Vikes lead 21-6. Jones.
Oh! Oh, he threw it to Van Ginkle. Touchdown. That's the fourth touchdown in Andrew Van Ginkle's career. And he read Daniel Jones like a book. And that book had a happy ending.
The Indianapolis Colts.
They got it now, first and 10 on their own 40. Richardson on play action, backs to throw. He slips on the turf, gets up, heaves it downfield, looking for Alec Pierce. He's got it! Touchdown! A bomb! 60 yards! Anthony Richardson to Alec Pierce! That's what you're talking about in the deep game! Touchdown! INDY!
The Arizona Cardinals.
This one hangs in the air. It'll make it past the 20, but it's taken on the 5-yard line by Dallas. Up the middle, 10, 20, 30, 35. Dallas to the 40, breaks the tackle. Far side of midfield, 45, 40. Dallas 35, 30, 25, 20. Dallas to the 10, to the 5, dives into the end zone. It's a touchdown for the Cardinals. A kickoff return for a score, and Arizona's right back in the game.
As we wrap up Touchdown Tuesday, those are your candidates for TD of the week. NFL Week 1, baby. And the poll is still live for another hour, so we need you to vote. We actually have a pretty tight race among three of our candidates, at least on Twix, at Amy After Hours. I will not tell you which ones. You have to go figure it out yourself. And while you're there, at Amy After Hours, you can post your questions for Ask Amy Anything, which is just over an hour from now. Also, you can do the same, each, the poll, as well as the questions, on our Facebook page. But to review, Andrew Van Ginkle with a pick 6 for the Vikings off of Daniel Jones and the Giants. The call with Paul Allen on Vikings radio. DJ Dallas with the first kickoff return for a touchdown in this new dynamic formation. And it certainly was dynamic. It was 96 yards. And that's Dave Pasch on the Cardinals radio network. Welcome back, Anthony Richardson. A 60-yard chuck to Alec Pierce downfield behind the defense. That was the first touchdown of the year for the Indianapolis Colts with Matt Taylor. And then finally, the turning point of the Miami Dolphins rally past the Jaguars. In fact, they're airing it on NFL Network right now on In My Studio. It was first a turnover by Travis Etienne on the goal line, immediately followed by a Tua-Tyree connection for 80 yards up the left sideline and a touchdown to the house. As I say, the major turning point, the series of events that led to Miami pulling that victory from the jaws of defeat. I think they were down 14 points in that when they were down 17-3. This is why I have notes. So you can vote again for your TD of the week. And while you're on either of our socials, you can also send your questions for Ask Amy Anything. I did just see this kind of funny. I was perusing the questions, which I don't always do. Sometimes I'm surprised and I don't know which ones you will choose. One guy posts on our Facebook page, and I'm assuming that he was doing this earlier when I would have been prepping for the show. I know you're watching the debate. Actually, I did not watch the debate. I didn't think it was a good idea for me to watch the debate before coming into work.
Your and stress levels that high before work.
Yeah, no, thank you. So, yes, that's why I'm taking off election night, because I do not want to be watching election results and what I'm sure will be stressful based on the tightness of the race and then have to come to work. Also, election night has become one of those nights when there is legit nothing going on in sports, because all the various leagues kind of clear the deck so their athletes can vote. And I think so they can encourage fans to vote. In many cases, some of the arenas or facilities are used as polling places too. Not all of them, but some of them. And so for that reason, election night truly is very quiet. And as someone who believes in our democracy and this process of voting, I also like to watch how it plays out. Something that I do regardless and have done my whole life, even going back to the days when I was first voting. So at A-Law Radio or on our Facebook page, love to connect with you, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. Let's see. Drew Rosenhaus, the agent for Tyreek Hill, weighs in the wake of the body cam video being released, and it's kind of interesting, and maybe we can bring back the bite of Tyreek Hill saying that he just wanted to let it go. He wasn't going to make a big deal of it. He thought that it would be better if they would collaborate and something positive would come out of it, but it has changed now. His tone has changed now. And then Charles Barkley weighing in, which, by the way, there's apparently some kind of a push by multiple networks to poach Charles Barkley from TNT and to get him to go work for them. I don't know. I'm not sure that his commentary would be welcome the same in other places as it has been on TNT. All right. We'll continue our march through the hump show. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update. And here's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
All right, Amy, still plenty of fallout from the Tyreek Hill incident on Sunday when he was detained by police and taken to the ground in handcuffs. Police officer was placed on administrative duties while the police union looking for his immediate reinstatement. However, Hill's agent, Drew Rosenhaus, looking for a lot more than just administrative leave, while discussing the situation on the Dan Le Batard Show.
I think that police officers that did that to Tyreek shouldn't be in that position. They should be let go. Look at the guy that just kicked him right there. That guy should be fired. That's out of control. The guy that jumped in, put him in a chokehold.
Housewife Adrian Peterson ordered by a Houston judge to turn over numerous assets in order to repay a debt estimated to be worth more than $12 million. Issue stems from a loan taken out in 2016, which Peterson claims he believed to be a business loan that his financial advisor had assured him would not require personal funds. Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin let it be known they'll continue to monitor the status of Russell Wilson. He needs to be healthy before having a conversation if he can supplant Justin Fields as quarterback.
When we get to those points, that's when we'll ponder his inclusion or not. And when that happens will probably be a component of that equation. But as I sit here today, we're preparing as if Justin is going to be our quarterback.
Checking baseball, where Michael Harris had himself a big night.
Michael Harris strokes one to deep right field. That one is back to the wall and out of here. That's into the bullpen. Hit very well off the bat of Michael Harris.
Pair of jacks for Harris as the Braves dominate the Nationals 12-0. Call courtesy of the Braves Radio Network. Rest your scores. The Cubs bounced the Dodgers 6-3. Orioles took out the Red Sox 5-3. Trey Turner went deep twice. Phillies overwhelmed the Rays 9-4. Reds blanked the Cardinals 3-zip. Brewers handled the Giants 3-2. Padres dubbed the Mariners 7-3. Manny Machado went deep, drove in 4. Twins overpowered the Angels 10-5. Guardians bounced the White Sox 5-0. Pirates stopped the Marlins 6-4. Royals silenced the Yankees 5-0 as Seth Lugo 7 innings to 3 at ball with 10 Ks. Blue Jays 6, Mets 2. Diamondbacks shut down the Rangers 6-0. Christian Walker homered twice. A's outlasted the Astros 4-3 and 12, and the Tigers just punished the Rockies 11-0. I'm Marco Belletti.
Hey, like us on Facebook. Our handle is INF Sportsnet. That's INF Sportsnet for our Facebook page. This is the Infinity Sports Network.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America's rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It's been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the time. This field, this game, is a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good and it could be again. Oh, people will come, Ray. People will most definitely come.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Wow, I just got chills. And I asked producer Pete for an exchange from James Earl Jones in Field of Dreams because that's what's on TBS right now. And earlier it was a baseball game. TBS was airing the Dodgers and Cubs. And I left it on this network simply because I don't know why I didn't change it. There's not anything else that I wanted to watch. NFL Network is on the other TV. And so it's on right now, and I've been following it without the sound, but we just got to the point in the movie where James Earl Jones' character is invited to go into the cornfield with the baseball players, who, of course, come out of the cornfield to play on the field, and then they go back in. And now the part where he reconnects with his dad. So it's supposed to be a movie about baseball, but it's also a movie about fathers and sons. And I love that part with James Earl Jones. And of course, the iconic, if you build it, they will come. If you build it, they will come. And yeah, I'm trying not to watch, but it's so special. I take that back. I'm watching. It's just so special and fitting, of course, since we just lost the great James Earl Jones. But Kevin Costner's character is now playing, well, I guess his name is Kinsella, right? Ray Kinsella. So he's now playing catch with his dad, John, who is roughly his age or actually even younger than he was. But it's pretty neat to see them play. You know what it reminds me of? The All-Star game a few years ago when the Griffies had a catch when they came out and had a catch. Actually, they did that at the Field of Dreams too, did they not? It wasn't the All-Star game. It was the Field of Dreams, wasn't it? Where they came out of the cornfield had a catch. Yeah, it was pretty neat. So just another way to underscore, forgive me, the All-Star game was a mixed memory. Another way to underscore that the game was about, or the movie is about fathers and sons. And yeah, pretty incredible to see them playing catch now. And just, I haven't seen this movie in years. So just to get this walk down memory lane, even on the occasion of the loss of James Earl Jones. Now, producer Pete, something else that I want to do last hour of the show. I feel like we should save one of the best for last. Do you remember where he did a spoken word version of the national anthem?
Yes, it was Camden Yards, I believe.
That was an All-Star game, correct?
Yes.
So that I would like to bring back in the final hour. And then also, this is something I discovered online. I'd not heard it at the time. When he, let's see, I think he was reading the alphabet on Sesame Street. When he read the alphabet, I believe it was on Sesame Street. That's also really funny. Maybe it wasn't the alphabet. Maybe it was something else. He was, it's just that voice that you could listen to him read a phone book and it would be dramatic, right? It's like a dramatic recitation. Recitation? Not a resuscitation. Although it could be that too. Dang, it's over. Now what do you think they're going to play on TBS? Wonder if it'll be another James Earl Jones movie.
The Sandlot.
Think Sandlot?
That should be next.
Well, if it better not be any type of one of the Star Wars movies, because I would be useless for the rest of the show.
I'd
have to turn it off. There have been times where I've come into work and Star Wars is on either TNT or they do what they call their big Monday movie tickets or something along those lines. And so there are times when I've had to come in and turn it off. Nope, they're replaying Field of Dreams. Okay. That's what happens overnight on TBS. They replay movies. So if you missed it, they are, I'm sure, doing this as a tribute to James Earl Jones, and maybe they're going to do other movies as well over the course of the week. So good time to get your DVR set. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. You've got inside of an hour now to share your questions for Ask Amy Anything at Amy After Hours or on our Facebook page. And in both cases, you can also vote for TD of the Week for another hour before we reveal that. Now, we spent a good portion of our last program on the situation with Tyreek Hill, having more information and the visual, meaning the body cam footage, to go along with the two sides of the story, I suppose. And if you remember, it was a fired up Tyreek Hill who was doing interviews after the Dolphins rallied for that victory against the Jaguars. Again, right now I'm watching it. They're tied at 17 with 2 minutes to play. And so this was a important rally for them, I think, because of the expectations that they have, but also the fact that he played a major role in it. Tyreek had the 80-yard touchdown. He also had some other big catches, and they were just full of adrenaline. So he's on the field. I've seen not only the interview he did on the field with CBS, but also heard his post-game press conference that we shared part of here on the show. And in both cases, he seemed very optimistic. He seemed upbeat. He didn't love what happened. He was, I would say, a little bit disingenuous about the situation, completely pretending that he was innocent of all, you know, wrongdoing or poor decision making, which we now know is not the case. But the fact that he has changed his tune a bit, because we heard from him on Sunday that he wanted to turn this into a positive.
Everybody has bad apples in every situation, you know. So I want to be able to, you know, use his platform, you know, to figure out a way to, like, flip this and, you know, make it a positive on both ends, on my end and then also Miami-Dade, you know, so that way we can team together and, you know, do something positive for the community, because that's what it's all about, bro.
So that was his comment on Sunday. On Tuesday, his attorney released a statement on behalf of Tyreek Hill calling for the, quote, immediate termination of the escalating officer who was placed on leave after the incident on Sunday. The officer is a 27-year-old veteran. His name is Danny Torres, and he was one of the officers in the video. This is presumably the one who pulled him out of his car by grabbing the back of his head and then also shoved him forcefully to the ground by, you know, grabbing him from behind and forcing him to sit down when he felt like Tyreek didn't respond to that order quickly enough. Now, as for its part, the Miami-Dade PD released its own statement this week calling Hill uncooperative, which led to an escalation of the situation. I think both things can be true. I'll say what I said last night. You know, for Tyreek Hill to feign innocence like he had no idea what happened is inaccurate. But at the same time, and he didn't follow the instructions of the police officers. At the same time, I wish that the officers had been, especially the one who used force. I wish that he had been the de-escalator and the, I don't want to say the peacemaker necessarily, but I wish that he had not taken the bait. Boy, isn't that a topic. I wish that he had not taken the bait and chosen to either allow his ego or his bravado or his emotion to dictate his actions. Instead, as a professional police officer, I think it's safe to say that he has been in far more emotional situations than that one and has probably heard far more from men and women that he has either had to arrest or talk down or wrestle or whatever else. This seemed relatively mild. It was a bunch of trolling, really. Tyreek Hill was mouthing off and he was running his mouth and didn't roll down the window when he was asked multiple times. But it seemed as though and I would agree with Tyreek's assessment of this, it seemed as though he went from 0 to 60 in the span of 2 seconds, maybe like what the car will do. And so I wish that the police officer had been professional about it and had de-escalated the situation, had given him his ticket, and everybody could have gone back on their merry way. Or as I said on the show last night, if you know he's Tyreek Hill, and it's clear on the body cam footage, they knew that it was Tyreek Hill, and you know that he needs to get to the stadium, I mean, just say, man, well, we're willing to wait for you, and you're ready to comply and sit down on the curb and zip it, then we'll move forward. So I don't think it was handled well on either end, and I wouldn't be surprised if the police officer ends up either with a verbal warning or having to apologize. I don't even know if they can make him apologize, but a verbal warning or some type of suspension. And I honestly wouldn't be surprised if he was fired either. I don't know that that's warranted, but I'm not in law enforcement, so I can't make that determination. But that was Tyreek's attorney demanding the immediate termination of the escalating officer. Drew Rosenhaus, who is Tyreek's agent, he was a guest on the Dan Lebatard show and was also demanding action.
I think that police officers that did that to Tyreek shouldn't be in that position. They should be let go. Look at the guy that just kicked him right there. That guy should be fired. That's out of control. The guy that jumped in, put him in a chokehold. There's no place for a police officer to have a badge that operates like that when Tyreek wasn't being aggressive or violent or fighting back in any capacity. Well, you know, that was horrendous how they treated him. They didn't treat him like a human being. There's no place for police officers to be on the force.
Chokehold is a little strong. He did bring his arm around from the back, but it was mostly around his shoulders. It wasn't up around his neck. The motion itself looked like that. And I guess I missed the part where he got kicked because I didn't see that. Did you, Pete?
I didn't see that, no.
Now, granted, I only watched 3.5 minutes of the body cam footage. There's a lot more of it out there. So maybe I missed that part, but I did not see that part. Like I said, I wish that it hadn't gone to this place. I wish that it had, you know, the officers had just responded very even keel and had de-escalated and given him the ticket and he could have gone on his merry way. But we're not in that space. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.